Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and today we begin the program by focusing on mushrooms. Mushrooms are very nutritious. They're good for your health. They contain various vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants, and you know what? They're fun to grow, too. And we have a couple of guests with you to talk about mushroom growing. They are with Field and Forest Products, the company located in Peshtigo, Wisconsin. With us, Joe Krawczyk, co-owner of the company. Joe, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here, Larry.
Great to have you here. With us as well, it's mycologist, Lindsay Bender. And Lindsay, great to have you with us as well.
Thanks so much for the chance to be on.
As we talk with our two guests today, I hope you'll join in. Would you like to grow your own mushrooms? What questions do you have for our guests? You can give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Joe, let's start with you. Tell us how Field and Forest got started.
Well, Larry, that's a long and interesting story, so I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version. Way back when, in 1982, I was working for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources on an acid rain program, and across my desk came a paper from the Forest Products Lab on cultivation of shiitake on natural logs, a potential new industry for the United States. Well, of course, I read that with interest, and it was predicting to be a $1 billion industry within a decade. Well, we're still waiting, but, you know, that's what got us interested in mushroom cultivation. And my wife and business partner, I decided, like, hey, let's hop on this. So we had resources in Peshtigo, and we decided just to move forward. And, you know, it's like anything else, you take a chance, and then it becomes a career. And here we are.
Yeah. Pretty cool story, actually. And Lindsay, what about you? How did you become interested in mycology?
So I was a graduate student at UW Green Bay, and I had really enjoyed a mix of biology-related classes, including microbiology and mycology, as well as ecology. So I found that mycology and the mushroom spawn business is kind of a wonderful mix of all of those. And at the time, my professor recommended this job posting. So fresh from college, I met Joe and Mary Ellen and visited Field and Forest Products. And here we are 10 years later.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. What's your favorite thing about mushrooms, Lindsay?
I would say the diversity, not only biologically speaking, but also the applications. In terms of cultivation, there's also so many different species that are cultivated and grown with different methods, different flavors. So every day there's something new, it seems.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Todd in La Crosse has a question about one type of mushroom. Let's go there. Hi, Todd.
Oh, hello. Hi. Yeah, and first off, thanks. I did come to your seminar maybe about 8 years ago on how to do the shiitakes, and we've done it every year, and it does work. and we try to do 25 or 50 logs every year. But my question is, I was thinking of branching off, and we have some walnut tree tops, and I've heard that the lion's mane can be grown with the drill and fill. Is that reliable, or is it a little more experimental?
Well, you know, that's the million-dollar question that we're asked every year, and every year we try to address it. But due to a lack of black walnut in this part of the state, we really haven't given any really rigorous testing. So we're really basing our recommendation on that on input from other customers who have access to black walnut. And I guess the verdict is, yeah, it works okay. You know, if you really want to grow lion's mane, there's other wood species that do better. And also, you can also be growing on a ready-to-food sawdust block. But that takes the fun out of it. You got the wood, when you got that desire to try something new and exciting, well, hey, I say go for it.
Yeah, there you go, Todd. Thanks for calling. And actually, I noticed on your website, which, by the way, is a really good website, that there's even a listing of trees that probably do the best, Lindsay, on depending on the type of mushroom.
Yes, that's definitely true. As Joe mentioned, we collect a lot of data on, you know, tree species and how suitable they are for the various mushroom species that we offer. And so we do our best to kind of put out that information that we've consolidated into a chart that kind of gauges suitability. And Joe mentioned, you know, we gather that information from growers, and one of the programs that we offer is citizen science, where essentially we work with growers wherever they're located, and they may or may not have access to tree species that we're able to test. And so oftentimes we'll work with them, send spawn, and then gather results and compile that into our database.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool database, actually. Joe, and your company's certified organic, and that apparently was important to you. Why was that?
Well, you know, it goes way back to the 1980s when we were asked by OCIA to write national standards for wood decay fungi, you know, that could be produced in a certified organic way. To me, it's the right thing to do. We believe in organic agriculture. We believe in the processes involved that maintain organic integrity. And, you know, the thing is that the way we produce shiitake, for instance, on natural logs, you really can't get much more organic than that. You know, we're harvesting a tree from a woodlot, or we're using a top from a timber harvest to grow an edible food product in a natural log. So in a way, it was kind of an easy step to take to go from conventional to organic. And we've always remained organic and will continue to do so because, as I said, it's really the right thing to do.
Yeah, is it difficult? I guess it doesn't sound like it would be difficult, but is it difficult to maintain an organic certification?
You know, like anything else, there's always hoops to jump through. But, you know, we've been doing it for so long, it's actually kind of second nature to us. We've really grown in the amount of fungi and different spawn that we offer to the consumer. And as a result of that, the hardest part has been sourcing certified organic stock for what we grow. But once you get that dialed in, it's just, you know, it's a phone call away now.
And Joe, maybe you could, well, continue that. You were kind of mentioned products. Maybe you can talk about the products that you do sell commercially and to, you know, the average person.
Sure. We sell numerous different types of mushroom spawn based upon what the person wants to grow. We've been involved with the production on shiitake and natural log since 1983, I do believe. So we offer that spawn, and that's our bread and butter. We offer it in the sawdust base, the plug base. And if you want to explore growing on a substrate, a grain-based spawn. But, you know, the interest in cultivation of other species and that knowledge that has become available to us has grown over the decades. So now we produce spawn for, and Lindsay, correct me, I lost track here, I think, at least 12 different strains of shiitake, at least 6 different oyster mushrooms. We grow spawn for the chestnut mushroom, namako, king oyster, maitake, silver shelf, and the list goes on and on and on.
Well, Lindsay, maybe you could talk about what you all do there. You're a video star, I see, too. I watched all your videos on your website, which were all interesting and fun. But what are your responsibilities?
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, not only do we provide the materials like the spawn Joe was discussing to growers, but a big part of our business model is to really educate you know, in the last few years. And, you know, since the 80s, we've really seen a growing interest in mushroom cultivation, especially in the last handful of years. And with that, you know, we get a lot of questions for people that are new to cultivation. So a big part of what we do is the education and testing new methods to ensure that they are commercially viable, or maybe they're more in the dabbling experimental realm. So apart from offering those supplies and materials for growing mushrooms, we also really delegate a lot of time towards training and education.
So that's part of the help that you can provide anybody who it probably is interested, but certainly who would be buying your products.
Yes, definitely. You know, one of the things that we often hear is that people will call us and they're really surprised that they get to talk to an actual human being. Really answer questions, no matter how long they want to stay on the phone. We'll be there to help them.
That is pretty cool. And Lindsay, I want to go back to those videos a little bit, because one of the part of the it was educational for me to watch all of the videos that you have produced. Maybe you could describe what you were doing there, and part of research to kind of substantiate the benefits, but done in a what I thought was a very as a professor here, scientific method.
Yeah, so perhaps you're referring to the SARE-funded work that we did where we investigated the additional benefits of cultivating wine cap, which it is not grown on logs such as shiitake, but it's rather grown on straw or wood chips, generally in a bed form, directly on the ground. And over the years, Joe and the other co-owner, Mary Ellen, had just noticed that in these areas where the wine cap was grown, the soil underneath, after just a year or two, seemed richer with better tilth and water holding capacity. And so over the years, this was an observation that they continuously noticed. And so part of that SARE-funded work was to actually set up a research project. And we did collaborate with a few other entities as well to make sure that we were getting the testing and the data we wanted to look at. But yeah, over the years, we found that wine cap significantly improved several parameters of soil health. And along with that, we also planted several crop plants, including black beans, tomatoes, corn, and other plants to kind of measure their health in response to the wine cap. And in most of those crops, we found that those plants that were polycultured alongside the mushroom wine cap, they yielded more, they were healthier, they were larger, more vigorous. So it was exciting for us because not only do we enjoy growing mushrooms and consuming them, but it was interesting to actually evaluate the additional benefits.
Yeah. And that wine cap composting material, that's actually available for people, is it not?
Yeah, so that's not something that we generally offer, although we do have a large amount of mushroom compost. But yeah, I've certainly seen in garden stores and you know, local offerings, this mushroom-based compost. And the thought is that, you know, some of those additional benefits and the antioxidants that come from mushrooms and all of that can be applied to your garden space, and you can gather some of those benefits.
We are talking today with a couple of folks from the Field and Forest Products Company. Joe Krawcheck is a co-owner, and the mycologist for the company, Lindsay Bender. Questions for them about mushrooms or growing them, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News and Garden Talk. Talking today with co-owner of Field and Forest Products, Joe Krawcheck, and mycologist for the company, Lindsay Bender, and we're visiting about mushrooms today on the show. You can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. Brian sent us an email. Are you any closer to being able to grow morel mushrooms?
Well, we were wondering when that question was going to pop up. Let me just give you our experience, and then I'll defer to Lindsay on this one. You know, we've been planting morel spawn on our property for decades. And you know what? And we get morels. But the question becomes, is that a result of the planting of mushroom spawn, or is it a change in the ecosystem that's allowing morels to show up that have already, that have always been there? So, you know, that's the million-dollar question. Is it working, or is it just a figment of our imagination? So, Lindsay, yeah, you got the latest greatest on all of this.
Yeah, so this has certainly been a mushroom that has been the eye of many cultivators in terms of, you know, a goal. And there's a long history of morel cultivation, including here in the U.S., but it was met with inconsistencies and complications. And then about 10 years ago, we started seeing significant signs of success out of China in terms of artificial cultivation of morels. And that was very promising. Since then, there's been a ton of development and really just understanding of the biology of these mysterious mushrooms. Morels are different than a lot of the standard cultivation mushrooms, which you provide a food source in ideal conditions and they just naturally fruit. The morel is more complicated than that, and that's why it's eluded many cultivators for so long. That being said, now with some more understanding, we've learned the importance of the actual mushroom strain itself and how capable it is for fruiting and cultivation. And then second, also, we've learned with some of that biology, there are conditions that are specific that are required, along with triggers for fruiting that can really help in promoting a successful fruiting. So the long story is that there's been a lot of headway in the last few years. And even success here, there's a Michigan researcher, Greg Bonito, that's been working on adapting that to North America. And, you know, we're working with new strains of mushrooms each year. And I think each year there's more and more promise to really nail it down.
Yeah.
I think Joe and I would concur that we'd still call it experimental, but I think we're getting really close.
Yeah. Well, hope you guys make it. You'll probably have an extra dollar or two in your bank account if you come up with us with a way to consistently grow morels. And they're so unusual. My dentist at the time, Bill, was telling me about one of his clients who said, oh, I've got all these mushrooms growing in my lawn in the backyard in my city street. Can you come over and take a look? And he said he went over and there were two grocery shopping bags full of morel mushrooms right in the middle of the darn lawn.
Yeah, how often we've heard that story, and it's pretty funny. We have people say, you know, I just got done mowing all those open.
Well, he said he couldn't wait for the next year, but the next year when the client came back, he asked her, she said, no, I don't have any of them this year. It's pretty unpredictable. Joe in Hayward has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Joe.
How's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I am looking to inoculate some freshly cut maple logs, and I was looking at the cold weather shiitakes for plug spawn, and I'm wondering what I can expect for yield and how many years.
All right.
Well, yeah, that's that is one of the most commonly asked questions that we get, and of course, it's going to boil down to what species of maple you're using, because hard maple is going to yield better than soft maple. And with cold weather strains, you know, you're going to start getting productivity in Hayward. Oh, it's going to take a good 15 months from the time of inoculation to fruiting. And then yields, there too, it's going to be based upon weather and management and how much love and attention you give your logs. But typically, with something like a cold weather strain, we look at a 10% yield of the wet weight of the wood. So if you got a 30-pound log, you're going to get 3 pounds of mushrooms over the life of that log. You know, there's different strains of shiitake, and the thing is that if you've never grown shiitake before, what I would say, take a look at a wide range strain. They're much easier growing. Typically, the yields are going to be a little bit better, and they're going to give you a faster response because, as we have found out over the decades, this crop takes patience, and a lot of people don't have that. And I would say, you know, if you're the type A personality that needs results now, please grow radishes and leave the mushrooms to other people.
Okay. Joe, there you go. And by the way, the size I saw on your somewhere on your website, the size of the diameter of the log, whatever it is, has an effect on like how long it's going to last and yield. Right, Lindsay?
Yeah. So overall, you can use all sorts of log sizes, but we find the ideal range is really 4 to 6 inches and about 36 inches to 40 inches long or so. That's kind of the standard. Usually at that size, they're easy to handle. They colonize rapidly. When you get into those larger diameter logs, like 8 to 10 inches, those get a lot heavier and harder to handle. But there is, of course, more substrate, more wood there. And you know, those larger logs can certainly produce more, but they will take quite a bit longer to get established before you get those first mushrooms. So that's always something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Joe, thanks much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Barb in Milwaukee. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I purchased some wine cap one from you guys a couple years ago, probably 4 years ago. And they did fine the first year. I put some around vegetables in my garden and some under a cherry tree. And but they, after the first year, I never saw them again. So I just wondered, are they a variety that you must purchase the one every year, or did I do something wrong?
Well, if you got mushrooms, evidently you did something right, which is great. Now, with wine cap, that's going to yield in longevity of the bed are going to be based upon the substrate and the substrate thickness. So, for instance, I remember feeling a call from someone who they said 3 years to produce a mushroom crop, but their substrate bed was 15 inches deep. And that bed, of course, lasted for years and years and years. So the thing is with wine cap, eventually it will take all that organic matter, all that substrate, and turn it into organic matter. So typically, yeah, we say, you know, give it a year, give it two, and then you'll probably want to start a new bed because it isn't what we'd say is a long-lasting perennial. It's kind of just a 1 or 2 or maybe even 3 year affair before it's pretty well run through its food source.
Would there be a better spawn for Barb to use?
You know, in the urban setting, or even in a rural setting, wine cap is a great mushroom for decaying readily available substrates such as wood chips and straw. You can go to growing other mushrooms, like almond agaricus or the bluet, but those aren't as easy. And the yields aren't nearly as good, but they certainly are, of course, a challenge to the gardener to grow and add, once again, another point of interest in the garden.
Yeah. Barb, does that help out?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Jim in Burnham Wood. Hi, Jim.
Hi. This is Uncle Jim in Burnham Wood. I've been working with you folks for at least 20 years. But what I really wanted to comment on is the fact that every year when I get my emails from you, you're always coming out with something new. And this last year, you came out with growing your own or making your own blocks for shiitake. And they're great during the winter months. They have something to grow. I had the 8-block set and the whole kit. And I guess what I was really doing is kind of commenting on how well it did. I don't know how much feedback you've been getting. I've grown the shiitakes in the blocks that you buy as a separate block, and now I've grown made the blocks from the kits that you have, and I would say I get about half as much shiitakes off of that as I would from one of your pre-made blocks. Some people, and we've got a wine club, and there were several people that have been doing this for several years who have gone through and done this, and some of them have had better luck, and some of them have less luck. I actually had two blocks, and the first block I wasn't real impressed with. The second block did a lot better. And it's probably just my technique of putting the blocks together that probably had something to do with it. But in any case, it was a wonderful experiment, and now I'm doing the second one, which was with the hen of the woods. And they're sitting there in my fermentation chamber, again from the wine club, sitting there getting nicely set up for putting them in the ground in June. So that's my feedback. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Well, I'll get some comments.
Thanks for the positive feedback, but also bear in mind that we're always welcome of negative feedback too, because, hey, we got to know how we're doing. Once that product leaves the door, we put it into the grower's hand, and we hope for the best. The best possible product out there, and hopefully they'll get the best possible results.
Let's talk about the grow kits for a bit. You've got... obviously, there's differences when growing inside versus outside, Lindsay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And some growers don't have access to land or space or maybe freshly cut wood. So there are a lot of ways to grow various mushrooms, and indoor cultivation is really appealing, especially for those of us in the north with these long winters. It's a nice way to cultivate food inside or even throughout the year. So with these kit options, essentially you're growing mushrooms on like a sawdust-based substrate instead of wood chips or straw. And that makes it very adaptable. Oftentimes those mushroom blocks fruit a lot faster than waiting up to a year before you get your first mushrooms on an oak log. The caveat to that is that oftentimes those blocks only fruit for several weeks to maybe 2 months. So it's a faster but shorter term payoff there. But the good news is that a lot of varieties are very adaptable to that method. And furthermore, with the availability of hardwood fuel pellets, which are essentially pre-sterilized, that allows growers to even make their own blocks, which is what I believe the caller was referring to. So that's kind of a low-tech method to really getting hands-on and getting more part of that process as opposed to just purchasing a kit that's been prepared by someone like us.
And what's included in a typical kit? Well, you know, I order one when it comes in the mail. What do I get?
Yeah, so if you're doing a ready-to-fruit block, that may be something that we've fully prepared. When you receive it, you simply open it up and the mushrooms do their thing. They fruit as soon as 6 days to 21 days, depending on the variety. With some of the kits, it's going to be a little more hands-on, where you're actually adding the water and mixing the substrate and then inoculating or adding that mushroom spawn to the material you've prepared. So we have a suite of kits available depending on whether you want to simply open it up and wait or you want to get a little more hands-on. That's probably going to be that hardwood fuel pellet kit. And with that, everything is sent along. You have all the materials you need apart from the water.
And now this is an aside, but it's something I saw on your website, and I thought, what is this? And it had to do with the use of cheese wax in organic production. And I thought, well, cheese wax. So I said, I got to ask that question. So what the heck is cheese wax, Joe, and how's it used?
Well, here we are in the dairy state, and we're blessed with an abundance of cheese wax producers, believe it or not. Cheese wax is used as a sealant for preventing spawn from drying out with natural log cultivation. So what happens is you're putting spawn into a log, and that spawn in our climate will tend to dry. So what we do is we heat up a bunch of cheese wax and we daub it on to seal that spawn into the log to maintain the moisture in the spawn.
Thank you for answering that question, because it's been in the back of my mind ever since I saw it. But that makes perfect sense to me. And there's no shortage of cheese wax in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, we're fortunate. We have two suppliers. And, you know, the thing is, it's our never-ending trial with organics and wax. But we do have a clear cheese wax that's been approved for organic production.
So the sounds like with a kit, you can either have mushrooms pretty darn fast, or maybe it's going to take a little while, Lindsay.
Yes, and that variation depends on the type of kit, but also the biology of the mushrooms. We have oyster mushrooms, which are incredibly vigorous. They grow really quickly. They're highly adaptable. They also have these broad fruiting temperature ranges, so they can be grown on a lot of different products, different substrates, and very quickly. So with oysters, oftentimes you're waiting a matter of days before those mushrooms begin to form. And once those mushrooms form, they form quickly over the period of sometimes 24 to 72 hours. On the flip side, there are some different mushroom varieties like the chestnut that tends to fruit slower. It's not necessarily less vigorous, but less aggressive, and it takes a little more time to prepare to fruit. And, you know, when mushrooms are cultivated or grown under cooler conditions, they tend to fruit or grow a little slower. And so sometimes those varieties can take up to 3 or 4 weeks before they're ready for harvest. It just kind of depends back to that biology of the mushroom itself and then how we're actually growing it.
I remember growing mushrooms once at home, and this is a long time ago, but I was circumstances led me out of the house for a week or better, and so the moisture level, it dried up quite a bit on me. So how much... And I did get some mushrooms, but not what I certainly would have expected had I been watering. How much care does it take?
Well, that's, of course, going to be dependent upon which mushroom you're growing and where. For instance, with shiitake logs outside, typically we have enough rainfall to carry log moisture content through the growing season. But then again, we run into really dry times when a little bit of help with irrigation goes a long way in getting the fungus established in the log. Now, conversely, what we see with some other mushroom crops, such as wine cap, which is, of course, grown in a bed on the ground, people will tend to love that to death. And they'll do that by overwatering. So it's, once again, it's that fine line between an art and a science with mushroom cultivation with moisture control. And, you know, believe it or not, mushrooms have survived without human help for a long time. But, you know, a little bit of help with a little bit of irrigation every once in a while goes a long way.
How many mushrooms, I mean, do we even have an idea of how many mushrooms, types of mushrooms exist in the world?
Do you want to take a stab at that, Lindsay? Because I have no idea.
Gosh, in terms of species of fungi, it's a huge and diverse kingdom. So millions, I would guess. In terms of mushrooms and then further cultivated mushrooms, there are quite a few less. You're probably talking, you know, maybe 30 or 40 established cultivars, and that's generally they're all contained within a specific group of fungi in general called Basidiomycota, and those tend to be a little easier to cultivate, many of which are obviously edible, but beyond that, many, many species of fungi.
Grant sent us an email. He has a friend in the San Francisco Bay Area who sends him porcini mushrooms that he foraged and then dried. Grant has never seen any sold fresh in Madison area farmers markets. Are they found only in the wild and in certain areas of the U.S.? He'd love to find some porcinis fresh.
Well, porcinis are found here in the state of Wisconsin and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, typically the latter part of August in oak forests. My Polish heritage takes me out to look for them. And you know what? I often come back with an empty basket because even though I'm out there to hunt, that doesn't mean the mushrooms are going to be ready. Now, it's interesting to note, recently there's been some research done on cultivation of that species. And that's happening in Europe where they're looking at, once again, forming a root association with specific trees to grow porcini, much like what has been done with the truffle fungus. So hold on. We'll see what happens.
And Tom emailed to ask how long it takes to grow mushroom spawn on wood log versus one of your mushroom blocks. Is there a growth life difference? How about it? And wondering about flavor and richness of flavor, Lindsay.
Yeah, so with log cultivation, there is this extended period of establishment. Essentially, to inoculate or plant a log, you're drilling holes across the surface area of that log and adding spawn, sealing with that cheese wax there. And then there's this waiting period where the mycelium in that spawn needs to colonize the majority of that log before it's able to fruit mushrooms. And that time it takes depends on the mushroom variety, the size of the log, and a few other factors. But in general, you know, hardwood logs are difficult to colonize, and that wait period can be a year to a year and a half, depending on the variety. Now, some mushrooms like oyster prefer softer hardwoods like box elder, which is a softer hardwood, easier to colonize. And then the wait time with some of those can be as short as 4 months after inoculation. When you get into producing mushrooms on other substrates like straw or wood chips or sawdust-based materials, oftentimes that wait time or establishment time is much shorter, on the period of weeks to perhaps months, depending on the variety, in which case you're able to harvest mushrooms as soon as a month after planting.
Talking today with two representatives from the Field and Forest Products Company of Peshtigo, Wisconsin, one of the co-owners, Joe Krawcheck, and mycologist Lindsay Bender. Questions for them, give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mailer for Garden Talk here on WPR News. Great to have you with us today, and a big thanks to everyone who donated during our one-day winter member drive. Support from people like, well, Heidi and Nina, Margaret and Appleton, and others, of course, makes WPR's essential service possible. If you missed the member drive, still time to join in with your gift at WPR.org. You certainly play an important role in keeping Wisconsin informed, inspired, and connected. And thank you so much for your partnership. We really appreciate it. As here on Garden Talk, we take a look at mushrooms. And just to let you know, coming up in the second hour of the show today, we'll be getting some advice on adding food plants to your landscaping. So looking forward to that as well. Right now, we're talking mushrooms with a couple of folks from the Field and Forest Products Company of Peshtigo, Joe Krawcheck, who is a co-owner, and mycologist Lindsay Bender. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Maybe we could talk about some of the terminology that you use. You know, when I saw the spawn, that word come up first, I thought of immediately to Star Trek. There were a few shows that related to the spawn, which are not the spawn you are talking about. There's some cool terminology. Maybe you can talk about some of it. So spawn first and then others.
Well, Linz, go ahead. You got a good grasp on it, so shoot.
Yeah, so I should apologize because I generally start any talk or educational event by describing what spawn is, because we use that word a lot. But in mushroom cultivation, I'm not so sure about Star Trek, but in mushroom cultivation, spawn is essentially a word for the seed or the carrier material of the mushroom mycelium. And I guess that's another term that I'll go ahead and describe. So mushrooms are the fruiting body, or the fruit, the structure that we're familiar with. That's the edible portion that people harvest when they're walking in the woods or from their shiitake log. But down below in the substrate or the media, the material that you're growing on, there's these fine root-like structures, the branching network of mycelium that kind of spreads and invades that substrate, harvests those nutrients. And that mycelium is generally what is used to inoculate or plant the material, the substrate you want to grow on. And so spawn can come in many forms depending on the usage or the material you want to plant. What's common for log cultivation is either a sawdust-based spawn or a plug spawn, which is essentially just a wooden dowel covered in that mushroom mycelium. And that wooden dowel then can easily be hammered into holes of an oak log. When it comes to other substrates, like inoculating straw with oysters, oftentimes people will utilize a grain-based spawn because it's easy to handle, and then the grains themselves can add nutrition and hopefully boost yields as well. So yeah, what Field and Forest Products does is produce spawn, and it comes in many different varieties depending on what you're looking to do with it.
And how's the company? I mean, you've been going a long time, Chuck. So obviously you've been successful. Would you say you work more with commercial operations, or do you work more with just the homeowners?
Well, we work, I would say, equally with both. We have a great community of home growers and small commercial growers that we service. And we also service large commercial growers nationwide. So we have a really large, wonderful family of customers that are growing mushrooms just about in every state in the union here. What keeps us going is that there's always something new and innovative coming up. You know, morel cultivation, you know, we've been pounding on that door for quite a while for success. And recently, we have started exploring in the cultivation of truffles here in the upper Midwest. So that's something new and exciting coming down the pipe. And boy, it's another project that's going to take time, but that's what fungi are all about, time. It takes time to rot things. It takes time to form fruit bodies. So, you know, we're patient people here.
So, thinking about truffles, and that reminds, you know, if you could grow truffles, truffles are, what, the most expensive if you were going to go try and buy them?
Well, yeah. Currently, I think the most expensive food product on the planet now is the Italian white truffle. And I'm not even going to quote a price because it's well out of my price range. Recently, we were at the Oregon Truffle Festival, and they saw me coming because I bought a black truffle at half a retail cost, and that was $35 an ounce. So for one mushroom, it was $70. Boy, the flavor and the uses of it, unbelievable. well worth the price of admission.
Well, that reminds me, how much do the mushrooms differ in taste? I remind me again, how many that you guys grow, and then what's the difference in taste among them, in flavor, I should say?
Well, let me just say that there's a world of difference between flavors and textures. You know, I cut my teeth on shiitake, and to me, that still is the most flavorful mushroom with so many culinary uses that it's unsurpassed. But then again, we can take a look at something like the Italian oyster. The Italian oyster is really good sautéed. As a matter of fact, we typically sauté it up for other dishes, and its nutty flavor prevents it from getting into those other dishes because we'll like eat them right out of the pan. Things like maitake, very woodsy, but with a great crunch that's just, that will hold up to any cooking technique. So, Linz, what do you got? What do you like in terms of fungi?
Yeah, so of all the varieties, there are so many different flavor profiles, and we get this question a lot when we sell fresh mushrooms at the Green Bay Farmers Market because they look different than that white button that people are used to. You know, when it comes to the white button, people that are comfortable and enjoy eating mushrooms, they know what to do with that one. But when you see a till of golden oysters or, you know, king oysters, where one mushroom can be well over a pound, you almost don't know what to do with it. So a big part of what we do is talk about flavor. And, you know, for some of the oyster mushrooms, they tend to be fairly mild and meaty. And so they can be incorporated in all sorts of ways, but they also don't hold a very overly strong flavor. As Joe mentioned with shiitake and some of the other varieties, they have such a distinct, unique flavor. With the shiitake, it's going to be bold and garlicky. With the hen of the woods or the maitake, it's going to be that true earthy, mushroomy sort of flavor. And so depending on what people are looking for or how brave perhaps they are, you know, we have a recommendation. But oftentimes people will walk up and say, okay, we're making pasta tonight. What do you recommend? So it just depends.
And you do, if I'm not mistaken, and I didn't look extensively at them, but you do have some recipes up, don't you?
Yeah, that's a big way that we can kind of convince people to give it a try, is at least show them a few options and what to do with it and how to prepare those mushrooms for cooking.
Yeah. So what are you having? What's your next meal of mushrooms?
Well, we were trying to coordinate a taco day at work. We like to do food days, and one of the easiest things to do is roast up some oyster mushrooms with a little bit of olive oil and taco seasoning and roast them until they're nice and meaty and use that as a meat substitute. So I guess that's my answer, but that's next week sometime.
And Joe?
Well, you know, we flavored some cheese with the truffles that we got in Oregon. So I think for lunch today, I'm going to try some truffle-enhanced Munster cheese on a sandwich.
Ooh. Oh, you're making me hungry, both of you. And people have just go online, I'm assuming, Joe, to if they want to order from you guys.
Sure. You know, definitely you can order anything you want online. But however, you know, if you have specific questions or you really are confused at what to do, give us a call. You know, we're always willing to help and guide people in their choice of mushroom spawn and the growing thing.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, Joe and Lindsay. I want to thank you both so much for being with us today. It's been a lot of fun learning about your work with mushrooms, and I bet you get a few clicks on your website today. Field and Forest Products is the name of the company. They're out of Peshtigo, Wisconsin. It's great to have them with us today. Coming up, we're going to talk about edible landscaping with our next guest. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News.